everybody, to another great edition of Talking Tigs. I'm Scott Girard. Joining me, as always, Tommy Johnson. Not quite yet is Daniel Zollinger, but we know that he will be here soon enough. We have more on that later. We can assure you he's back in the United States, safe and sound, and we have actually contracted the services of Miles Brennan's doctor, so we're going to get some updates soon, we believe, but Daniel's fine, just so you know. But it'll just be me and Tommy here tonight again, just to recap this wonderful weekend for LSU baseball. They take the series against the Tennessee Volunteers, much contested. I mean, LSU won game one, Tennessee won game two in convincing fashion, and then, of course, the Tigers dominated game three. We'll get into all of that, as well as a few other things. Oh, by the way, there was the NFL draft this weekend, so I guess we could probably talk about that, LSU and Saints and otherwise. But before we even touch on those subjects, Tommy, how are you? A lot going on in the sports world, at least in Louisiana, man. Just want to check in with you first, make sure you're up for this.
Man, no, I'm excited to be with you. We're fresh off. I mean, we're 20 minutes off of a Tiger win and Alex Box taking a big series against the number six team in the country. Excited to go over it with you. And like you said, NFL draft, big weekend for some of our former Tigers as well. So excited to talk about it with you.
Amen. Likewise. And I know we'll have Daniel back next week. We'll be at full strength, but I know we can push on through for this weekend. I mean, lots to go over, but I mean, basically the facts speak for themselves. The Tigers take two of three from Tennessee, and it was, gosh, probably the one of the more like high, what would you call it? Just emotional series of the year for the Tigers.
High energy.
Thank you. The box was packed. The box, Alex Box, that is, was packed. They actually set a record for this weekend for most in LSU history. They tallied 38,142, which is just amazing. I think yesterday or today was like the single largest single game. Just paid, but just actually attended in Tiger baseball history. That was 11,439 persons, which is just amazing. And even though the Tigers lost yesterday, it was definitely still worth it because, again, they take the series today. Great series all around. I'd say it came down to LSU pitching, even just being able to hold them in the game for game one and two because – it was a pitcher's duel, basically, right? Game one and two. Game three, not quite as much. The Tiger bats also started to come alive, so we finally got to see some separation there. But just wanted to get your initial take because, man, it feels like we could finally exhale after this weekend. Still got three strong weekends left to go, but I feel like we're at least halfway to our talks last week. And as long as the Tigers take two out of the last four, I think we're good for a national seed, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they were even saying it on the broadcast today that like 13 wins gets you, you know, the conventional wisdom is 13 wins in the SEC gets you into the tournament. From there, you know, every other win you get moves you up. I think it's also important to mention, Scott, not only did we take the series against Tennessee. Now, we started off the week with a really rocky performance against Northwestern, getting 10 run ruled against an absolute directional school. So, going into this series, you know, it was not looking good. On paper, at least. I mean, we were kind of in a bit of a slump. But that Friday game, won after multiple rain delays and ended up finishing the game at like 1 a.m. Insane performance there. I mean, Kate Anderson, they call it on if you follow LSU baseball, they'll say, you know, happy Kate Anderson shove day. I mean, he did shove on him. It was a great performance. Pretty dominant from him. Saturday, hats off to, what was it? Is it Phillips? The pitcher? Yeah. You know, hats off to him. He pitched really well. I think Anthony Ianson did fine. We just didn't, you know, we just didn't have the bats there. I mean, I think Derek Curiel went 0-for, and so did Bear Jones. Those are two of your most reliable bats on the lineup, and so, you know, when they're not hitting, it's going to be tough for you to put runs on the board. But today's game, I mean, what can you say about Cason Evans coming, basically a guy who we've seen as a bullpen arm, coming in and starting his first game in the SEC, and I mean, he looks like an ace. Looks like a Friday guy.
Yeah, he did. He did. And I mean, he did, because he gave it at least what, six?
I think he went six. I think he went six full innings.
Yeah, against one of the nation's top, you know, well, I would say 10, but I'll just lower it to like top six or seven teams. Tennessee, the reigning national champions. So no slouches themselves. But yeah, Cason Evans, we thought, you know, he'd give us at least so many innings, right? Like maybe he would at least carry us through three or four, and then Evans would come in for another three or four, and then we just kind of play it by ear from then. But Evans gave us a good six-plus innings, which is amazing. Kind of makes you think what we need to do for the future, because, you know, we did use Chase Shores yesterday in that game two loss. So I guess it was going to be a mix today, but, you know, maybe Jay Johnson is tinkering. He did tinker earlier this week with that, as you mentioned, horrible loss to Northwestern State. But I mean, he was just trying to see what would, you know, mix it up, because LSU's offense was obviously in a funk. He had Jared Jones at third trying to, you know, just mix who else he could put up in the lineup that he could, you know, deliver a clutch hit or a clutch home run. Tigers, they were ahead before that, you know, very long lightning / weather / whatever. You know, it is weather delay season in the Southeastern Conference. So LSU did what they did beforehand. But then, of course, after the break, Northwestern State just put it on them, man. We just got embarrassed. No other way to put it. And it's okay, because that hasn't happened yet this season, which, you know, that has happened last year a few times. Hasn't happened yet this year. So if that's the case, and then like you said last week on our pod, if that kind of just sparks us to turn a corner, you know, kind of hit rock bottom and bounce back up, then so be it. And now that we've seen game three and the results of the series, I'm hoping that's the case, you know?
No, I think so. And I mean, it's pretty crazy when you, if you get to stumble upon a new starter, you know, a starter you didn't know you had, or at least the fans didn't know. You know, it might be a thing where in scrimmages during fall ball, all that kind of stuff, they saw Cason Evans pitching and, you know, knew he had it in him to be a starter for us. But I mean, that's the secret sauce. We've talked about it on this podcast for years now. You have three good starters, three starters you can rely on. That's how you can win in this in college baseball, and it's very rare to have that. Even in the national championship year, you know, we really had two, you know, two and a half, and so I'm very excited after these wins. I mean, I'm excited to be able to take two out of three from Tennessee, a team that it got real chippy with. I mean, I don't know what that guy was thinking. Aguilar, their shortstop, looked wanting a fight of all the people to pick, trying to pick a fight with. Why would you pick Jared Jones, who's the biggest player on the field?
Yeah, I don't know. I got some thoughts on that. I was going to get into that after we kind of touched the basics, but you're right, because there was, you know, game two, there was obviously some video where it was chippy. Even game one, after Bear Jones's walk-off home run, the Tigers kind of directed some of their celebration towards the Tennessee dugout. Maybe it was a carryover into game two, but I know why, because I saw it in some of the game footage from game one. I'm just wondering if you saw it or if you had any thoughts about that, because I think all of it's totally justified. It made for a great series, and, you know, no ill will towards Tennessee, because there's obviously a very good, talented team there that we honestly, we stole game one from. They took game two, but we dominated game three, and I'm happy with that. Be that as may, whatever happens for the rest of the season, you know, go Tigers. But yeah, it was very chippy. Did you see what started what I think is maybe the chippiness?
Well, like, kind of, he felt like he was being thrown at.
Well, there was that, but I think it bleeded over from game one, because after Tennessee kind of started to hit, because, you know, it was basically more or less a no-hitter. I mean, Tennessee had some hits, you know, through those first five innings. LSU didn't have any, right? Like, that was the issue for LSU game one and two, is we didn't have any hits through games, through six innings game one, five innings game two. And once, you know, Tennessee wasn't that much different. Once they finally got a hit against Cade Henderson, they started to celebrate. But what I saw was that whoever, I thought it was Arrieta, or it was the
Arrieta.
Maybe it was the other guy, because after he got on first, and sorry to sidebar again, but do you remember from 2023 how LSU, they kind of had a celebration every time somebody had a big hit or, yes, or something? What was it?
The hit in the Tommy.
Yeah, they would do the
crossed arms.
Arms crossed, staring like, what now? That type of thing. So that was the, you know, the pose for that season. This season, I've watched it's they
the
develop some
up.
Right, they just stand there, but it's like the, you know, it's kind of cheesy. You're kind of making a joke, I feel, but either way, that's the thing. That was the thing in 2023. This is the thing now. I don't remember anything last year, but that's the thing. And after Tennessee got, I guess maybe they felt they had some momentum in that game one, one of the Tennessee guys, he got on first base, he did the thumbs up, and then he immediately did the thumbs down. So they were aware of our celebration. Yeah, it's on social media somewhere. But obviously Bear Jones saw it because he was on first base, but he was the one that was probably the most, you know, inspired by that, because he saw it. He was right there on first base, and he probably told the dugout. But, yeah, they were mocking us, right?
Yeah.
It's like, why? We've done our thing this whole season. Has nothing to do with you, and you're going to come into our house and mock our positive. Uh-oh. So I think that kind of, you know, motivated Bear. I mean, you could say it's a coincidence, but he just so happened to hit the walk-off home run in that game. Probably first. The second longest in LSU history, actually. Hit it over the batter's eye. I think it bounced off Nicholson and hit the you know, the outside of Tiger Stadium. I'm not sure. I'm still waiting on verification from Verge on that. But we did see that. That was a huge home run to win game one. But it happened after that.
Yeah.
Now that you know about that, I mean, you can do your own research, obviously. You too are listeners. But if that was the case, like, wouldn't that inspire you to, like, just hit the longest home run in LSU history and then some?
Well, and also, not to mention, I mean, this Tennessee team, you know, skippered by Tony Vitello, they're not the most friendly.
Did you say Tiny Vitello or Tony? I couldn't hear that.
Tony.
Oh, okay. Sorry. It was a bad connection. Sorry.
No, that's good. But they're not the most friendly team. They like being, you know, the bad boys, kind of. They like being chippy and proud, I guess you could say.
They wore a mink coat after home runs in, you know, like 80 degrees summer heat. So that tells you something.
Yeah. And so I think that they're kind of looking for a fight as well.
Probably. They maybe need some relevance. They'd lost the last two weekend series themselves. One at home against what was at the time. Well, I mean, there's Missouri and then there's everybody else, right? But other than Missouri, A&M was the worst team in the SEC, and then they just took two out of three from Tennessee. Not game one, which, you know, from Liam Doyle, we pretty much had an issue from that ourselves. So just to kind of bring it all back around, yeah, LSU won game one, but I feel like we stole it from them, because in the bottom of the ninth, we were down three, and we were gifted with a couple errors, and we turned that into a 6-run bottom of the ninth. Hallelujah, our bats came alive. They didn't really come alive again for game two, but then obviously in game three, we just blew the doors wide open. We had the pitching. They didn't. I think we could probably tie it up with a nice bow with that, right?
Yeah. No, I think that's totally accurate. Great series win. I think we're, you know, good way to get back on track after a disappointing loss in a midweek game. Obviously, the midweek games don't really matter, but you want to take, you know, but they don't matter, but they do. They don't matter for our SEC standings. They don't matter for Hoover. I don't think they really matter for the tournament, but they matter in the, you know, we look at it as a marker of focus, as a marker of having a complete team that's ready to take care of business. We were not ready to take care of business earlier this week. We were ready to take care of business this weekend.
We were. And it, you know, obviously Jay was tinkering with the lineup still and just brought in some guys at the right moments. Even with the game two loss, you know, it's like we were pretty much dormant hitting wise the whole game. And then all of a sudden we got two home runs back to back. Right. And then, you know, then John Pearson came in out of nowhere, hit another home run. It's great to hit home runs, but, you know, LSU, obviously their bread and butter is having guys on base when you do that. Case in point, game one with, Jared Jones hitting one with two guys on. Otherwise, who knows? We probably would have been playing extra inning games, right? Extra inning Friday night would have gone into, 10, 11, 12 again. Who knows? But because there were another two guys on base, it ended it. So hallelujah. And we have this next week to look forward to. We will be on the road to A&M, who just lost a tough one to Texas. I don't know. I haven't watched game three. I know they lost the series already because Texas won the first two, and they were very close too. It was 2-1 and 3-2. We could probably Google. We don't have to burn dead airtime on it, but I know that game three is going on now, but Texas is obviously the real deal. Arkansas lost their series to Florida. We'll see what happens with A&M here, whether they just lose the series or they get swept. But either way, it kind of brings them back down. Maybe it helps our chances next weekend because we got to travel to them. And then, man, it's crazy. Arkansas lost their series at Florida. So another team we were going to host, which we thought was going to be, you know, it's a very good RPI-based team. They're still going to be within the top 10, I think, but we're going to host them before we eventually end the season at South Carolina and then look forward to the SEC tournament. But I feel Tigers are still in a very good position because, man, we're still within that top 8 sweet spot. And like we talked about, if we just win another series, I think mainly if we just win at home versus Arkansas, let the rest take care of itself. I think LSU will still be hosting in the postseason as long as we don't SHIT the bed in the SEC tournament. What say you?
I think that's accurate. I mean, I think I've got that, like you said, that Arkansas series circled. And then also I've got South Carolina circled. I think that we can go on the road there and take it from. You take those two series, or you take one of the next three, you're good. You take two of the next three, you're golden. I think that's how it's going to be. We were number 7 going into this past week. Tennessee was number 6. Beating them, you know, you think we should at least move up to 6. So further cushion into that top 8. I know that's not exactly, that's like, it's not apples to apples. They don't like just take the top eight, but typically they do. The ratings all align. So I'm excited about it. I think this team is hopefully we're on the upswing, saying our worst baseball is behind us and our best baseball is right in front of us. Because if so, we're peaking at the right time.
Right. And just a small little microcosm of that. Derek Curiel's 43 game on base streak ended last night in the loss. But then he turned around, almost hit for the cycle today on Sunday. And obviously got the Tigers started early, helped contribute later in the game, and then kind of just got a different streak going. So really awesome to see that, and can't wait to see what the Tigers build upon. Because yeah, it looks like we maybe don't have to worry about a game three starter. It might still be Johnny Holstaff, but don't you feel good knowing that our mid game relievers or our game three starters is either Cason Evans or Zach Cowan?
Yes. No, I think you're right there. And I mean, I on the broadcast today, they mentioned, you know, that if game two is on the line or game one is on the line, Jay is not going to be, he's not going to hold Cason Evans out of the bullpen and save him for Sunday. You know, he's still a bullpen guy, but I love seeing what we got to see today. And
right.
I think that shows that if everything goes right, you know, goes smoothly, then you've got a very, very good option for a game three starter.
Yes, you do. And it was just kind of interesting because both two games this week, like the midweek game against Northwestern State, I was delayed by lightning or just weather in general. It was delayed. Well, LSU jumped out to a lead and then there was a delay. Then Northwestern State just scored like six in a row. And after that, they were just unstoppable, it seemed, which was kind of like what you had alluded to last week. Maybe just LSU needed a wake-up call. We thought it was, you know, the week before, but, you know, perhaps that was it. And, you know, now the Tigers are dealing. And there was also a 3.5-hour delay against Tennessee for game one, but Tigers came out. All the fans that end up staying came out. It was still loud. Even like once the Tigers won the game in the walk-off, like, what was it? Like you said, 1:15 a.m.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Another game into, like, even if LSU didn't win that series, I feel like you could almost put that game into Tiger lore of just, you know, Alex Box magic. Because some games do come down to just that, right? So
sometimes you just need, as Jay would say, that magic moment. And there are many this weekend.
Amen. Speaking of magic moments, I don't know if you could paraphrase it as that, but we did have the NFL draft this weekend and there were a lot of surprises, I guess you could say. A good faction of, I guess, America feels like Shedeur Sanders was supposed to be the number one pick overall, and if not, then America's, you know, just a ticking time bomb. I strongly disagree. I feel like, you know, all the factors were there to see where this wasn't really that much of a surprise. But kudos to the LSU players that got. I mean, Will Campbell drafted fourth overall. I believe it was the highest draft position for an LSU lineman. And lots of other successes after that. But just curious on your, initial perspective of the draft itself. It was, you know, they were doing this rotating cities thing, and it was in Green Bay this year. I don't think they really had like a really exceptional draft. You know, I think the Saints did well. I think all the individual players, at least the ones that were happy with their draft, did well, including Will Campbell. But what was your initial take on the, you know, we could probably do it by round, but I guess I could just check in with you overall.
Overall, I'd say little bit of a weird draft. I thought that the Green Bay was kind of, I thought that the way that they did it, I mean, it was, I guess it, in some ways it was cool. The one thing I would say I really liked, and I don't remember if they did this last year or not, but they had College Game Day as like the, at least for me, it was like the only, the broadcast I saw. It was like the ABC broadcast.
Okay. So I did see Reese Davis there talk, like yelling at Mel Kiper, which I enjoyed, but.
Yeah. So I didn't actually have to watch a lot of Mel Kiper because my main broadcast was Reese Davis, Nick Saban, and Desmond Howard, and Kirk Herbstreit. So enjoyed that. I felt like the green room was very weird. I saw a funny tweet that was like it looked like a carpet, like a carpet show floor, which I think is accurate. Like you're trying to buy some furniture or something,
right? That's funny.
But I mean, congrats to Will Campbell. Glad that he got, you know, drafted top five pick. I think he deserved it. On the Shadur thing, I feel like he fell way further than he should have.
But why though? Because the whole, I mean, you could look at some people and think it's racism. You could think at some people and think it's, well, they just didn't like his attitude. Other people would say, bro, he wasn't the greatest quarterback. I mean, he went 4-8 in the Big 12. I mean, what's the big deal? Other people, you could say, I don't know, teammates.
I feel like he's better than the guy the Saints took.
We'll see. Sorry, I got to cut you. I don't mean to cut you off. No disrespect. Is he better than Cam Ward, your Heisman pick, but who actually ended up going first pick overall? Is he better than Cam Ward?
No, I'm not saying he should have been the first overall, but I'm saying I would say, and I think most people would agree with this. This was not a deep quarterback draft. There was not. I mean, Cam Ward's not Burrow or Trevor Lawrence. Like he's not an elite quarterback. I wish him the best. I think he'll be, actually, I don't even know how he'll be in the NFL. I think I'm sure he'd be maybe fine, but I'm not going to pick him to, be like Jaden Daniels or something first year.
Why would you?
I think that you've got, I think Jackson Dart is fine. I don't think he's incredible. But I don't know. I think Shador was better than some of the people who came before him. I think that he's better than Dylan Gabriel, who was picked before him.
Same team, right? Now?
Yes. Well, that's weird, too. They now have, like, five quarterbacks on the roster.
I know. And main one being...
Deshaun Watson.
So, like, who's going to usurp him, right? Nobody. Well... I guess it remains to be seen unless there's an injury or some other weird circumstance. But yeah, I don't know that he's better than, I mean, you could make your argument there, but yeah, maybe not better than Cam Ward. Yeah, is he better than the guy from Louisville? I don't know, but that's obviously a Saints pick. Like, if they already have what I would say is a Shedeur Sanders in Spencer Rattler, but. If the Saints are obviously keeping Derek Carr, they're seeing a different type of quarterback from their system. Maybe the guy from Louisville is that guy. We shall see. But I think that's, kind of like, what would you call it? Totally different situation. Mutual exclusivity. Mutual exclusivity is what I'm saying.
I mean, I get that, but I also think that, like, just because you're picking a quarterback who is probably not going to start for you, doesn't mean you shouldn't pick the best available. And I just disagreed. I think that Shador was better than him. I mean, honestly, I think Quinn Ewers is better than the guy from Louisville.
That's what I was going to bring up. So what happened to Quinn? Because
I don't know.
He can sling it. I don't know if there was an attitude issue perceived or otherwise, but I mean, that was part of the thing with Shador is, and you'd sent it. Well, not to call you out, but I don't know if you'd posted it publicly, but you had sent something to us about him, just not really interviewing well. And that yeah. is an actual piece of the puzzle. So if he's not presenting himself well to these teams who are expected to invest millions, you know, not just in one season, but in future seasons on one player, shouldn't they take that into consideration?
Well, that's true. I think yes. I think they do keep taking into consideration. Clearly they did, but and maybe he was terrible in interviews, and maybe he was and I mean that's all part of it. But I also kind of feel like it was a way to stick it to Deion.
Okay, I saw this argument online also, but do you really think an NFL team whose bottom line is, you know, money brought in, they're going to put that over their own team's success and profitability?
Well, that's a good point, because having a Sanders on your team would be very profitable.
Exactly. That's what yeah. I'm saying is, if the Saints wanted to pick a second, well, honestly, I don't think the Saints probably had other, if they're going to stick with Derek Carr, you know, God willing. If
I
you're
have
gonna
no idea what.
Go ahead.
Why are they like, this is totally unrelated to this podcast, but why are they sticking with Derek Carr when he's not even going to play this year?
I don't know. And that's the thing, is if you're going to stick with the guy, why not build around him instead of using a, like, if quarterback's an issue, why would you spend it on round two as opposed to round one or like 5, 6, 7? Why are you wasting a round two on a quarterback if you are basically saying by round one, this is our guy? Right? They drafted a lineman to protect David Carr. So why would you immediately in round two picked another quarterback as opposed to Mason Taylor, the record setting quarterback in LSU history as far as a tight end, right? Most yards, most reception. I mean, all that. It just doesn't make sense. So as crazy as Mel Kiper is, I want to take a little piece of what he's saying, is these GMs don't know what they're doing. In some cases, yeah, I don't think they do. I mean, it doesn't excuse why someone would or would not pick Shoder Sanders. I don't think that was the guy that's going to lead the Saints back to the promised land. But if you are sticking with a guy, the logic is, why would you pick a quarterback for round two that's, you know, just kind of like a gamble, right? Like I don't know if he was the best quarterback available, but you did have Quinn Ewers there, who's more proven than, you know, the guy they picked from Louisville, because Quinn Ewers played in two playoff games, right?
Yeah.
And you can say that both of those losses were on him. So what gives? I don't know, Tommy. I think we just need to kind of ignore the NFL draft results and just stick to the regular season and just focus on college and the portal action, because it probably would have benefited Quinn Ewers more financially anyway if he'd have just transferred for his last year, as opposed to going to the draft.
Carson Beck,
right? And now Arch Manning is going to make what he makes, and Quinn Ewers is probably going to take a salary reduction to go to the NFL, as opposed to transferring to Miami. Maybe dating a Cavender twin and I don't know, making more than a few hundred thousand in the NFL,
Yeah. Making league minimum to be a scout team quarterback.
Right. Exactly. But just to recap the good news, the good side of things, as we said, Will Campbell was round one, pick four goes to the Patriots. And in round two, you got Mason Taylor. Then you also had two Joneses, not related, Emory Jones and Savion Jones going. Emory Jones going, I forget now. I think it was the
Baltimore, right?
Thank you. Yes, Baltimore. And then Savion Jones. Man, it was actually the first time in LSU history that two linemen were taken in the first three rounds. So if I'm,
Brett,
exactly. If you're Brad Davis, you're kind of thinking, where's my PR person hammering that one home? When it's time to renegotiate my contracts, because that's very telling. And then he had like the only other two players after that, like after Savion Jones, were both linemen, Miles Frazier and Derek Ellinger. So kudos to them and to Brad Davis, because dude had four guys taken in the draft. Only one other player that was taken, at least in the first seven rounds, was not a lineman. So I think that kind of says something. And yeah, I don't know. I guess you kind of called on Cam's word talent. You were kind of ahead of your time. It wasn't meant for college. It was meant for the pros. And he's going to
a little early.
Yeah, exactly. And I think he's going to a team where he could really show that, because it was, like you said, it wasn't really a quarterback draft class this year. Next year, setting up to be a huge one. And yeah. I think you can kind of tell that. Of course, we do got to talk about, we kind of touched on Quinn Ewers is not, you know, his falling, and we could probably do a separate pod in and of itself as far as how these guys presented their draft day, you know, live feeds. Shadur had the whole production set up. It was a whole Hollywood thing. Didn't work out. Spent a lot of money. Very big disappointment there. Quinn Ewers had like 100 animal heads behind him. Didn't work out until it did. And then you're like, I mean, maybe this guy should just have an ESPN outdoors show or something where he's just, you know, him and his dad are just hunting. Yeah. Point being, but
might make more money.
Exactly. Kind of like Duck Dynasty. Anyway, as far as Shadur goes, I mean, it remains to be seen, because he could definitely prove himself in the pros. A lot of people say he was snubbed. I don't see the snub, to be honest. I mean, just based off of picks one and a lot of the picks before Shadur was picked, but it has nothing to do with just himself. You know, I don't know if it really has much to do with on his field, because on the field, like the highlights, is his production was decent, at least, right? I think it's just some of the other stuff that teams, like I said, if you have to invest millions of dollars into someone, you're taking all this into consideration. I mean, they do have a psychological test there for a reason, because on the field's one thing, off the field's another, and everything in between, right?
Yeah. No, you're right. And even to argue, I can argue with myself and say, if you're going to pick a, if you're picking a guy who you know is not going to start for you, then maybe it doesn't really matter as much. Like it doesn't really matter who your third string quarterback is. And so just pick somebody who's serviceable. And the guy who, you know, just because Sanders has a big name, if he didn't, like you said, he didn't interview well, he didn't prepare for the draft well, you know, you could take somebody else. I guess I just tend to think he's going to be better than advertised, because he's been advertised very a lot. right. I think he's better than he's going to be marked up on this draft.
Sure. Yeah, and like I said, it's up to him to prove the haters wrong. And honestly, I hope he can. I think it'll be better for the sport, because this whole draft series, especially for Mel Kiper, because, I mean, the dude should have retired years ago, but he had a full-on meltdown. Like, he adopted Shadur Sanders and was his coach throughout peewee football, and, like, now he's so offended he wasn't drafted in the top pick. It's like, dude, get over yourself. Reese Davis kind of had to put him in place. You can go on social media and find that clip if you want to, folks. But it's just all this reaction of why Shadur wasn't picked in either top one, top 10, first round in general, second round, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's nothing other than just the vibe people got, you know, and just the facts that were there in front of them. So let Shadur prove them otherwise. He's going to Cleveland. I guess you could say, I don't know, Tommy, is this a deep QB room? I mean, there's
a lot of people there.
Right. There's that. But, like, you know, as far as talent, ability wise, I mean, does he have a chance in where he landed?
I mean, he's number five on the depth chart right now. You would imagine. They have Deshaun Watson, then they have they picked up Joe Flacco, then they have Kenny Pickett, then they drafted Dylan Gabriel, and then they drafted Shadur Sanders. I guess he has a chance. I don't know. I think it's just a weird situation. It feels like a quarterback room that's an inch deep and a mile wide. I wouldn't say.
Yeah,
I think there are a lot of warm bodies there.
Right. And that's been LSU for what, like basically the 2010s, where we just, man, we needed somebody. We were willing to take a chance on anybody, but ultimately nobody showed up until Joe Burrow in 2019 or 2018, excuse me. Anyway, we'll see what happens there. But the draft's behind us. There was even some LSU players drafted after the fact. Hope everybody does well. And yeah, we'll see. I mean, it's too bad we don't have Daniel with us. I think we had another transfer portal ad, which LSU was very high on, you know, as far as the spring portal goes, because, you know, we're still trying to shore up our defensive line. And we did land Bernard Gooden out of the portal from South Florida, who big dude, definitely has a presence. And, you know, we shall see, because we did have to replace some guys, you know, like Braden Swenson got drafted. Savion Jones got drafted. Obviously, they were going to leave. But it's kind of interesting because Gooden kind of committed after those two guys went in the draft. You're like, oh, LSU puts defensive linemen into the draft. All right, I guess I'll go to LSU. Of course, that's my fantasy take, but I mean, how can you argue otherwise, Tommy?
I don't disagree. I think you're right, Scott.
Okay. glad we're on the same page. I don't know. I mean, that was pretty much it, man. It was basically the LSU Tigers taking on Tennessee, big touted series. And then of course the NFL draft, we've covered pretty much all of those, but anything else that you wanted to toss out there?
Yeah, I think that's about it for me. Just again, a big exciting win in this Tennessee series. Ready for another week of baseball, and as we close in on Hoover, I mean, that's one of the best, you know, weeks of the year as far as just watching good baseball. So excited, yeah. Excited with the way this season's shaping up.
Amen. And I think as long as LSU wins 1 to 2 games in Hoover, we should solidify our place as a potential top 8 pick, which would mean we're hosting a regional and a super regional leading up to the selection Monday that goes to Omaha. But I would say that, the weather delays are among us now, and hopefully they're few and far between moving forward. But LSU did very good with theirs. And yeah, I guess we'll see what happens after this. So, there's one thing I did want to mention. You know, with kind of what I mentioned earlier about the magic of Alex Box, what goes along with that is sometimes specific events that kind of, you know, are a catalyst to that. I know you might remember there was a time not long ago where there was a possum that entered the LSU playing field. And then after that, LSU scored like 9 unanswered runs or something. So became known as the Rally Possum. There's been other, you know, instances from that. Friday, you know, the ninth inning 6-run comeback, there was a student tossed in between innings because they had thrown threw a ball onto the field, and security identified this one kid, tossed him out of the game. LSU scores 6 in the bottom of the ninth. I mean, you can say it's not related, but how can you argue it isn't?
This is not an encouragement either.
No, it's not. No, we here at Talking Tigs affirmatively do not condone this type of behavior. I mean, we will support it after the fact if it results in an LSU win, but yes. No, we are not saying do this every game, because that's just not right. It just so happens. And plus, I think they identified the wrong kid, because he was there the next game too. Yeah. I mean, he's like, you can look in the photo. He's like, I didn't throw anything. There's video. Like, every stadium pretty much has security footage. You can pinpoint who it is. But somebody ran out to the outfield and like, him right there. Like, what? I mean, because, you know, the right field bleachers, that's pretty much student section. So who knows what's going on there. But that's what happened. Tigers came back. Do that next time if you want to. That's all I'm going to say. But I think that'll pretty much do it for us here on Talking Tigs. Tune in next week. Hopefully we'll have some more antics for you, as well as a series win against A&M on the road in College Station as we start to finalize the regular season baseball schedule before the SEC tournament. Again, I'm Scott. This is Tommy. Hopefully we're going to have Daniel with us next weekend. But until then, stay safe, stay tuned, and we will talk to you next time right here on Talking Tigs.